Take back the city for yourself tonight. I'll take back the city for me. Take back the city for yourself tonight. Whoa, whoa.
Welcome to Third Paradigm, a weekly think tank on how to take back our cities, farmland, and water, our money, production, and trade, our media, education, and culture, our religion, and even our God. Our goal is community sovereignty, and our method is global solidarity, because it takes a network to undermine an empire. I'm your host, Teresa Caraggio, broadcasting through Free Radio Santa Cruz and Upstart Radio Online. Welcome to the 17th episode of Third Paradigm, entitled Love 'em and Eat 'em, The Art of Animal Husbandry. This week, I had the opportunity to interview Nicolette Hahn Nyman, the author of Righteous Pork Chop and the environmental lawyer who led the charge against factory livestock farming under Robert F. Kennedy Jr. She organized a national reform movement that laid the groundwork for the fight against inhumane animal confinement, industrial breeding, and the devastating pollution caused by manure lagoons. To make the point that it doesn't have to be that way, she toured the ranches that were using the best of practices, where she could still find them. One name stood out, Bill Nyman of Nyman Ranch. 2 years into her job at Waterkeeper, however, a new boss curtailed the campaign and cut the budget in half. She decided to leave after organizing the second Hog Summit. In the process of starting over, this vegetarian East Coast lawyer fell in love with Nyman, the West Coast cattle rancher. Even more surprising, especially to him, was her decision to become a rancher herself. After today's Third Paradigm, we'll be broadcasting my interview with Nicolette. But my interview reflects my own agenda. I've been experimenting with backyard chickens and rabbits, and a few of us are looking to start a dairy co-op and hog farm. In my interview, I jump right into the practical details of raising animals for food, which may make some squeamish. In this episode, I'll balance that out by relating the facts that should make us squeamish. It's an ugly world out there in big ag, both for humans and animals. So for vegetarians who claim the moral high ground, be prepared to defend your territory. First, however, I'll read a medley of farming poems to the music of Explosions in the Sky with Your Hand in Mine. Sabbaths, 1998, 6. By expenditure of hope, intelligence, and work, you think you have it fixed. It is unfixed by rule. Within the darkness, all is being changed, and you also will be changed. Now I recall to mind a costly year. Jane Kenyon, Bill Lippert, Philip Sherrard, all in the same spring dead. So much companionship gone as the river goes. And my good workhorse Nick, dead, who called out to me in his conclusive pain to ask my help. I had no help to give. And flood covered the cropland twice. By summer's end, there are no more perfect leaves. But won't you be ashamed to count the passing year at its mere cost, your debt inevitably paid? For every year is costly, as you know well. Nothing is given that is not taken, and nothing taken that was not first a gift. The gift is balanced by its total loss, and yet the light breaks in, heaven seizing its moments that are at once its own and yours. The day ends and is unending, where the summer tanager, warbler, and vireo sing as they move among illuminated leaves. That was Wendell Berry from Given. Throw yourself like seed. shake off this sadness and recover your spirit. Sluggish, you will never see the wheel of fate that brushes your heel as it turns going by. The man who wants to live is the man in whom life is abundant. Now you are only giving food to that final pain, which is slowly winding you in the nets of death. But to live is to work, and the only thing which lasts is the work. Start then, turn to the work. Throw yourself like seed as you walk, and into your own field. Don't turn your face, for that would be to turn it to death, and do not let the past weigh down your motion. Leave what's alive in the furrow, what's dead in yourself, for life does not move in the same way as a group of clouds. From your work, you will be able one day to gather yourself. That's Miguel de Unamuno from Roots and Wings, edited and translated by Robert Bly. A spiritual journey. And the world cannot be discovered by a journey of miles, no matter how long, but only by a spiritual journey, a journey of 1 inch. Very arduous and humbling and joyful, by which we arrive at the ground at our feet and learn to be at home. That's Wendell Berry from Collected Poems. And one more. Starting with little things. Love the earth like a mole, fur near. Nearsighted, hold close the clods, their fine print headlines. Pat them with soft hands. Like spades, but pink and loving, they break rock, nudge giants aside, affable plow. Fields are to touch. Each day, nuzzle your way. Tomorrow, the world. William Stafford from The Way It Is. Those were poems by Wendell Berry, Miguel de Unamuno, and William Stafford. The music in the background was Explosions in the Sky with Your Hand in Mine. These are all poems that I receive courtesy of Joe Riley's Daily Yahoo group, Panhala.net. With the last poem was an adorable photo of a baby mole, all blind and pink and shovel-pawed. I'm sure that if we looked, we could also find a picture of a cute baby gopher. But no farmer can afford to be soft-hearted and sentimental about gophers. Even our crunchier-than-thou UCSC farm has a go-to gopher guy. I'm certain they do their best to dispatch them humanely, but I'm equally certain that some students would object to killing them at all. With the help of a cute photo, I'm sure we could gather a gopher rescue crew, who would meet for tofu burgers and plot anarchist acts to subvert the gopher traps and liberate the gophers. Mass consumerism has given us the luxury of anthropomorphizing animals, giving them a right to life rather than a right to a good life while they live. No creature, which I believe includes humans, should be subjected to pain, fear, or a miserable existence. But our food does all of these things to people, as do our computers, energy, clothing, cell phones, and bike tires. So why does the humane killing of animals for food come under such scrutiny? And why do the same people who do anything for animals have so little interest in the inhumane conditions we impose on people, especially immigrant workers and those in other countries? In my opinion, animal activists are the right-to-lifers of the left. With animals and fetuses, both have found an issue on which they can be perfectly innocent and blame the problem on someone else. On the animal side, they can be vegans who eschew leather and animal testing. On the fetus side, they can be men or women who want more adoptable babies. My listener in Bangladesh says that our culture fetishizes children to distract us from our darker deeds. But only our own children, he clarifies. Street children killed in Rio don't bother us, or the kids who stitch the soccer balls that our kids play with. But Nicolette Hahn-Nyman walks this line between extremists, industrial ag on one side and vegan extremist on the other, in which category she doesn't include all vegans. Both sides perpetuate the extreme inhumanity to animals of factory farms by radicalizing the debate. Big Ag fights those fighting for compassionate treatment as animal liberationists, and the vegan extremists reserve their most vicious attacks for those they consider hypocrites. Yesterday, I was talking to some of the farmers at the market about the drum circle, which has led customers like me and vendors like them to avoid the downtown Wednesday market if they can help it. I started to wonder if those who fight for the drummers, including some of our pirate programmers here at the station, are getting kickbacks from Safeway. And what about the vitriol with which they attack downtown shop owners who don't want their customers to wade through a sea of panhandlers? Every customer intimidated away from the independent vendors and farmers is another plus for the big box retailers and malls. I'm sure there's money to be made here, like the paid agitators who infiltrate peaceful protest. Radical vegans are providing a valuable service to factory farms by attacking compassionate ranchers, farmers, and advocates. They should collect for their PR services if they're not already. But these are my words, not Nicolette's. Her more balanced approach has been to attract a community of river keepers, environmental activists, politicians, farmers, and ranchers. There's a sense of proportion in her work that shines a spotlight on the most egregious practices and finds the best of the alternatives to celebrate. After reading Righteous Pork Chop, I think there's no greater symbol of our indifference than factory farms, and I wish there were more Nicolettes to bring us back to sanity. We'll take a break, and when we return, we'll give some examples in Nicolette's own words.
Thank you.
That was Cowboy Junkies with Angel Mine. The cover of Righteous Porkchop features a pig with a halo glowing above it. However, after reading the book, it's Nicolette who is the guardian angel to the pigs, chickens, turkeys, fish, and meat and dairy cows. This really gives a new meaning to the song when I imagine it being crooned by millions of animals spending their lives trapped in narrow crates. Another angel that Nicolette writes about is Gail Eisnitz, courageous author of Slaughterhouse, in which she documents widespread abuses. Gail's question after they watch heartbreaking video footage is, "Where is God for these sows?" But even retired Marines can be swine and poultry angels. Rick Dove became a river keeper for the Neuse River after the North Carolina fisheries collapsed. With military precision, he organized battalions of volunteers to document river contamination. They found that hog and poultry containment operations were spraying liquefied manure over fields with giant water cannons. Rick is the person who first focused Bobby Kennedy's attention on industrial animal operations. But he doesn't stop with the pollution aspect. He accompanies the author in tour after grueling tour of confinement facilities. After one particular day of dank, putrid buildings crammed with thousands of suffering animals, Rick turns to her and says, "Nicolette, this has been one of the most depressing days of my life." And yet he goes on. The history of the poultry business is both hopeful and dismal. The hopeful part is that it hasn't been that long ago that each house had its own chickens. In the middle of the 19th century, there were over 500 breeds with birds and eggs in a rainbow of colors, shapes, and sizes. Poultry shows were so competitive that hardly an exhibition escaped charges of bribery and favoritism. More than 350 periodicals dealt with raising and breeding poultry. I just looked online to order some fertile eggs for my own incubator. Even the rarest of the rare assortments list no more than 30 breeds. But incubators, of which mine is a miniature replica, set poultry farming on an unerring industrial course. By the start of the 1930s, a single incubating machine could hatch 52,000 chicks at once. They started being bred for specialization. For the egg-laying breeds, males were worthless, and hatcheries at our neighboring Petaluma would drown 2 million male chicks a year. The meat chickens were bred for overdeveloped breasts, the Mae West of the poultry pinup girls. But then, as now, Double D has its price. The birds are unable to walk, even if they weren't in battery cages. For the egg-laying hens, the battery cages keep them in artificial light to lay year-round, since chickens normally only lay 9 months of the year. They stand on wire mesh with no nesting materials. And after a year, they're past their prime. At this point, they're vacuumed up into trucks and dumped into a rotating blade chopper at a rendering plant, all while still alive and conscious. It's hard to imagine this for little Lucy, Lily, and Gladiola, my three hens. I got my hens from Christopher, the guy who built my chicken coop, who got them in turn from Brandon Faria at the farmer's market. Along with Gardner, my bread guy, the four of us are starting a Food in the Hood program here on the West Side. When Brandon was over recently, he met my chickens and recognized them. I said, "You must mean the breed." And he said no, he knew the individual chickens because he'd only had 20 at the time. My chickens are in their third year and still laying at the maximum, which is 2 eggs every 3 days. Brandon's managed to do chicken outplacement for his post-prime birds, sending them to chicken rest homes like orchards. He'll dispatch the occasional chicken for dinner, but hundreds at a time doesn't seem right to him. Done on a backyard scale, it's a remarkably efficient system. Christopher tells me that our neighborhood is doing its part to bring back chickens, and every other house in my neighborhood has a few. He's giving a presentation to the Miles Street neighborhood next week. If you'd like to know more about Food in the Hood or animal husbandry co-ops, send an email to me at Tereza, T-E-R-E-Z-A, at RetroMetro.com. When I Googled songs about livestock for our final song, I came across one site that said, "Cattle have been getting some bad press lately. Western editorials report the consumption of too much fatty red meat leading to increased heart disease, the inefficient use of grain as feed for livestock, the generation of milk lakes by subsidized dairy producers, and the production of methane gases by cattle, a factor in the greenhouse effect." Elsewhere in the world, cattle receive songs of praise. The songs are as old as civilization, when women and men first began to husband resources against the dry season, against winter, against unpredictable floods and drought. Farmers in the tropics and subtropics, where agricultural resources are scarce, face special hardships. Cattle help them survive those hardships. In the vast arid and semi-arid regions of the tropics, livestock offers people their only livelihood. For most people in the third world, cattle are not a product. They are life-supporting. The numbers of cattle kept are impressive. Asia has more than 500 million cattle, Africa some 160 million, Latin America has about 280 million cattle, a quarter of the world's population, which graze on natural pasture land that makes up 80% of the agricultural area. But alas, our culture writes no songs of praise to cows, or pigs, or chickens that I could find. So for our final song, I'm continuing with the livestock guardian angel theme for Nicolette, who's gone from being a New York City angel to a Northern California angel, like the band Thriving Ivory. And, as it says, this is for all of us. All of us who are...
I really appreciated...
All of us who are daring to look our food choices in the eye, whether literally or metaphorically. Angels on the Moon is also dedicated to my daughter Olivia, who loves the song. Stay tuned for my interview with Nicolette Hahn-Nyman, rancher, lawyer, and author of Righteous Pork Chop. If your station doesn't have the time slot to play the interview, it can be found with all of our archive shows at radioforall.net. Just search alphabetically by series. This has been Teresa Caraggio with Third Paradigm. Thanks to Skidmark Bob for production and editing.
Do you dream that the world will know your name? So tell me your name. And do you care about all the little things or anything at all? I wanna feel all the chemicals inside. I wanna feel sunburn just to know that I'm alive, to know I'm alive. And don't tell me if I'm dying, cause I don't wanna know. Tell me, do you believe? I'm dying, 'cause I don't wanna know if I can't see the sun.